This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump's decision to fire FBI Director James Comey has created a few waves. Will there be political fallout from the decision, or is this the path to restore confidence in the nation's top law enforcement agency? We'll talk about it with Indiana Congressman Jim Banks, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, in just a moment. Also, President Trump met today with Russia's foreign minister. Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, will be here with his assessment of the meeting. And the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians gets underway tonight in Washington, D.C. One of the participants, Father Dr. Alexei Shahada, who is the Director General of the Department of Ecumenical Relations and Development for the Patriarch of Antioch in Damascus, Syria, is here. I would have used the acronym, but it was even longer. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, you can find it there. It'll be archived a little bit later tonight. Again, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Hey, let me remind you, at the website, I've got some information up there for you. If you're a pastor, coming up May the 24th through the 26th, just a couple of weeks away, will be our Watchman on the Wall annual pastor's briefing. Almost full, but we've got a few seats left. This is a great opportunity for pastors. If you're a pastor of a church, senior pastor, we'd love for you to be our guest at our annual Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing, again, May 24th through the 26th. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Also, there's also information up there about our upcoming trip to Alaska. If you'd like to join us, along with Michelle Bachman, General Jerry Boykin, Ken Blackwell, Ambassador Ken Blackwell, we've got a few cabins left on that cruise coming up the end of July, 1st of August. That information as well found at TonyPerkins.com. All right, I mean, if you've heard about it, obviously, the president yesterday sending a letter to the FBI director, James Comey, telling him that, well, he was fired. He sent him a very short letter. Dear Director Comey, I have received the attached letters from the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General of the United States recommending your dismissal as the Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I have accepted their recommendation, and you are hereby terminated and removed from office, effective immediately. While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau. It is essential that we find new leadership for the FBI that restores public trust and confidence in its vital law enforcement mission. I wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. Signed, Donald J. Trump. Well, that has created, I would say, a firestorm. But, I mean, look, the president can't do anything in this environment without creating, generating a lot of backlash. But when you look through the recommendations of Rod Rosenstein, who is the deputy attorney general, who makes his recommendations, well, it basically says that in a memo, the director was wrong to usurp the attorney general's authority on July the 5th, 2016, and announce his conclusion that the case should be closed. This is referring to the case with Hillary Clinton and the emails. It says, it is not the function of the director to make such an announcement. Compounding the error, he goes on, the director ignored another longstanding principle. We do not hold press conferences to release derogatory information about the subject of a declined criminal investigation. And he continues on, it's a three-page memo. My perspective on these issues is shared by former attorneys general and deputy attorneys general from different eras in both political parties. And he goes on to quote from several of them who question, in fact, outright said that Comey's decision and how he handled himself was a mistake. Alberto Gonzalez, who also served as Attorney General under President George W. Bush, called the decision an error in judgment. Eric Holder, who served as Deputy Attorney General under President Clinton and Attorney General under President Obama, said the director's decision was incorrect. It violated longstanding Justice Department policies and traditions. Former Deputy Attorneys General Gorelick and Thompson described the unusual events as real-time, raw take, transparency taken to its illogical limit, a kind of reality TV of federal criminal investigation that is antithetical to the interest of justice, end quote. So, what does this mean? Are we going to see a partisan political storm eclipse everything else in Washington, D.C., or is this a pathway forward to restore confidence in our nation's top law enforcement agency? Joining us now to talk about this, Indiana Congressman Jim Banks, who serves on the House Judiciary Committee. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's great to be with you again.
Did members of the committee get any advance warning that this was coming?
Well, first of all, Tony, I don't serve on the Judiciary Committee. I serve on the Armed Services Committee. So let me get that straight from the beginning. But members of Congress at large know. I think many of us were surprised by the timing of the announcement of the president's firing of Director Comey yesterday. The timing leaves a number of questions on the table, but I think most of us at the same time believe that this was probably a long time coming. And as you just eloquently stated, this is an opportunity for the president to move the FBI forward by choosing a new leader who can restore trust and integrity in the institution of the FBI and be treated with more integrity than what we've seen out of Director Comey in recent months.
This is, it's kind of interesting when you see the Democratic response to this. We've seen, of course, Chuck Schumer. I mean, you do not want to be in between him and the microphone when something occurs because he will run you over. But he begins to lament what the president has done, calling it a mistake. But if I recall correctly, Mr. Schumer was calling for Comey to be fired earlier.
There's no question, Tony. There is a great deal of political irony in the theatrics of the Democrats in the aftermath of the firing of Mr. Comey yesterday. Many of the Democrats called for his firing long ago, and so there's a lot of irony as they once again begin a new political witch hunt in Washington in the aftermath of the president's decision. Many of us believe, myself included, in the aftermath of the election last year that Mr. Comey lost the trust of the American people and how he handled the election, the investigations of Hillary's emails and whatnot. Even as a conservative Republican myself, I cringed at how that was handled by Mr. Comey in the aftermath of during the election last year. But even in recent days with Mr. Comey's testimony before the Congress, which was inaccurate, he misstated a number of facts and later retracted them. The way he's handled his job has not been up to the standard of what we'd expect from our FBI director. So I've read recently about low morale at the FBI, and it's my hope that now the president has an opportunity to restore confidence in the institution of the FBI by turning to someone with integrity who can do that. And so I'm optimistic about the future.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana's 3rd Congressional District, my guest in this first segment as we talk about what occurred yesterday as the president told Mr. Comey that you're fired immediately. Removed from office. Now, Jim, one of the issues with the removal of Director Comey is the fact that he was conducting an investigation into possible connections between Russia and members of President Trump's campaign. Is that what complicates this in terms of allowing the Democrats to, say that this is, some of them say a Saturday night massacre, making references back to Watergate? Or is that just for them politically?
Well, the timing, Tony, leaves a lot of questions to be answered. And it's my hope, all the while, everything we've already talked about, there were a lot of good reasons for the president to make the decision that he did. However, the timing was suspect. The timing left too many unanswered questions. And it's my hope that the president will rise to the moment, address the American people, and explain why he made the decision that he did, explain himself better than what he has yet to this point. If he does that, and I believe that hopefully he will, then he will look very presidential in that moment by doing so, and put the Democrats and the opposition, the resistance, expose them for the political calculations that they're making in the aftermath of the good decision that the president made, and the president can still do that. So it's my hope that he will here in the near term and answer some of those unanswered questions so that we can move forward and put a better leader in the position where we need a better leader to lead the FBI forward. All of the investigations into the election last year and the connections with Russia by some of the alleged connections to Russia by some of the president's inner circle during the campaign, those investigations will continue under the new leadership of whoever the president appoints, and the Congress will play a significant role in those investigations as well. So I have full confidence that we will get a good result out of those investigations, but we shouldn't distract from that in this moment by being distracted by some of these unanswered questions. The president can answer them quickly and we can move forward.
So where does the Bureau of Justice, where do they go from here?
Well, they're looking for they're looking for a restoration of the preeminence and the integrity of this institution, and I think that's the institution itself is looking to the president for new leadership to repair the damage that's been done over the past year by poor leadership in that post. So I think justice will be well served in this case by the president showing leadership, which he's done in so many cases already in his first 4 months in office, and so many good names are already rising to the top as the president looks to who to choose to lead the FBI forward. It should be someone who is capable of being nonpartisan, who's eminently qualified with integrity to lead the institution forward. And I believe that the president will pick will find a good choice to do that. I'm looking forward to him doing that quickly.
All right, Congressman Jim Banks, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I'm certain the president did not take this decision lightly. And the fact that you had the attorney general and then he allowed basically the deputy attorney general to make the recommendation after doing a thorough investigation into the the events that have occurred over the last, not quite year, but people were losing confidence internally and across the country. And coming out of an administration that was as lawless as we saw under the Obama administration, maybe it's good to get a clean start. I do think that, as Congressman Banks said, the president's going to have to explain this to the country and move on. But he just needs to know, and I think he does know. Every move he makes is going to be criticized. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later. But coming up next, President Trump met today with Russia's foreign minister, Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, will be here next with his assessment of the meeting here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're coming back with more after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us the grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345, and our website is afafoundation.net.
Eight Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. President Trump hosted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov at the White House earlier today. Of course, the timing, you know, with the dismissal of the FBI director, this meeting was apparently already scheduled. But it certainly made it for the timing very interesting. With us to talk about the meeting is Frank Gaffney. He is the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Now, in fact, earlier today, the Russian foreign minister met with the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The meetings, you know, as I said, were taking place just one day after Trump fired the FBI director. I'm sure that came up in conversation.
Well, I would reckon it did. Of course, we don't know exactly what all they discussed, but I think that the background of this, of course, Tony, as you know so well, and your audience does, I'm sure, is that Donald Trump was, I believe, vexed, and properly so, with at least some of what the former director of the FBI, Jim Comey, was doing with respect to investigating him or investigating some of his personnel on the suspicion that they may have been having untoward relationships with Lavrov's representative in Washington, the Russian ambassador. So I have to believe that at the very least it was in the background, if not something that they actually addressed, as I suspect was this larger concern of whether there is a Russian active influence operation being run against our country. And it didn't start with the Trump campaign, needless to say, or the 2016 election for that matter. And what I would like to think is that one of the things they discussed, because it was clearly on the president's mind earlier in the week, he tweeted about it, namely the involvement of the Russians with a whole host of Democrats, including Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and many others, Joe Biden, And these are the sorts of things, it seems to me, Tony, to just segue to another aspect of this, which is, of course, the ongoing investigations on Capitol Hill. Those, if you want real bipartisanship in these investigations, and that's what everybody professes, let's make sure that the focus of the investigations is bipartisan, not just the participation of the members.
Good point. I imagine that in the conversation, I would hope, that they discussed what's happening in Syria, of course, Ukraine, and other issues that are of mutual concern to both of our countries.
Well, again, I think those almost certainly were on the agenda. The differences about what's going on in Syria are pretty profound. There's reportedly a commitment on the part of the Russians to facilitate safe havens. I think that's something that the president is keen on, but I don't think there's been much delivered on that commitment so far. On Ukraine, of course, the Russians are continuing to wage what amounts to war against the Ukrainians, and I don't think that's either consistent with our interests or with the idea that we might be able to find more common ground with the Russians. You know, but one other piece, Tony, that I also hope was on the agenda that we rarely hear about, though, again, the president has expressed concerns about it from time to time, and that is the immense buildup, nuclear buildup of the arsenal of the Russian Federation, to the point where, by some accounts, there are something on the order of 22 different strategic missile and other nuclear delivery systems that are all being brought to bear by the Russians, a huge modernization program, at a time when we basically are out of that business. We've got a couple on the drawing boards, but that's something that the president and the Russians ought to be talking about, because I think it's ominous indeed.
Well, and we saw just earlier this week Putin flexing his military muscle with their parades as they were celebrating the defeat of Nazi Germany, which occurred 68 years ago. So that clearly was, I think, on the forefront of Putin's mind as he had those military parades across the country.
Yeah. Well, it's very much part of his thing. I mean, he's investing in these weapons because he thinks they do confer both superpower status on what is, by most other measures, at best, a sort of second world country, if not a third world one. And it gives him the ability, as you say, Tony, to flex his muscles in ways that, again, can be ominous for his neighbors, some of whom he has overtly threatened with nuclear attack from time to time, and certainly for those of us who are concerned about America, which is also in the Russians' crosshairs.
Well, how does that line up with the agreement negotiated by Barack Obama with Russia in terms of nuclear reduction?
Well, I thought that New START deal was a bad deal for a whole host of reasons. It looks now as though the Russians intend to break out of it in the next year or so. But in any event, as I say, the thing is that they have been actively building up in terms of both the quality as well as the advanced capabilities of that arsenal, including, by the way, something that you probably are familiar with, Tony, hypersonic and maneuvering warheads for their ballistic missiles, which are explicitly designed, Putin has made this no secret, explicitly designed to try to defeat our missile defenses. So these are ways in which I think he is continuing to threaten us, even if he were to, in theory, adhere to this treaty. In practice, I don't think he is, certainly not in the spirit of it, that's for sure.
And we're standing flat-footed. It would be very difficult ever to catch up with what they're doing. Frank Gaffney, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate your insight.
Pleasure's on mine. Thank you, Tony.
All right, Frank Gaffney. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. See, Russia, and we've had military experts have said this. You know, we're looking at China, we're looking at North Korea, looking at in the Middle East, all problem and hotspots. Russia, they say, is the greatest threat. All right, coming up next, as the war rages on in Syria with some 400,000 dead and millions more displaced, even delivering humanitarian aid has become extremely hazardous. We're going to talk about this with a church leader that's been facing the persecution in Syria next. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, according to Goldman Sachs, now's a good time to be getting into the markets. Why? Low volatility. As a matter of fact, not only low volatility, but we have historically low volatility. That's a good thing, don't get me wrong, but I fail to make the same connection from an economic analysis standpoint that Goldman Sachs is making, that this is a good time to get into the market because volatility is low. Certainly, it would indicate that there is some stability in the markets, stability among traders, institutional investors, and that's a very good thing. I talked about that yesterday on the program, but I don't know whether it's a good time to be getting into the market at historical highs. Now, I've been making a case that we do need to be invested and we do need to be invested into this market, but I wouldn't make the case that we need to do it because volatility is low. Well, we've got something else. FBI Director Comey, of course, being fired. I happen to think it's a good thing and I'm all for it, but just what we don't need, another distraction in Washington, D.C., I'm concerned about all the distractions that we have been experiencing in Washington, and we still have a bill to get through the Senate to replace and reform Obamacare, and that is going to go to committee, and will that get passed prior to the next recess? That's a concern. All these distractions concern me because we have to get tax reform. We need an economy that is propped up by something strong in its foundation. And the only thing that can be is tax reform, and it's got to happen soon.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, starting tonight in Washington, it'll be the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians. In fact, FRC's Travis Weber is going to be one of the advisors in this gathering and be speaking on one of the panels. This Franklin Graham's actually pulling this together as a part of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. They're bringing in about 600 individuals from around the world that have personally faced persecution or been a part of that happening in their communities to draw attention to this issue. We talked about it, I believe, it's recently we've talked about it, because it's a big issue. 90,000. According to studies, 90,000 Christians lost their lives in 2016 for no other reason than the fact that they were Christians. It's happening all over the world, not only in the Middle East, obviously in North Korea and China, but even in Mexico. It's an issue, not as prominent as it is in Syria and Iraq, but it is becoming a global problem. In fact, I was talking with Bill Bennett recently about it, and he wrote a book called Tried by Fire, The First 1,000 Years of the Church, and it talks about the persecution in the early years, and we were discussing, and he said, you know what, I thought when I wrote the book that, I was looking back on the most persecuted time of the church, and he said, not anymore. He said the persecution the church is facing today eclipses anything that the church has seen in its nearly 2,000 years. And I have argued repeatedly that a part of what's happening globally is in part due to America's failure, not only failure to lead internationally, but the hostility that Christians here in America have faced at the hands of their own government. Now, clearly it's not what's happening in the Middle East where people are being murdered. But the hostility we see here in America to people who want to live out their faith in the marketplace is, I believe, giving rise to the terrorists and the tyrants abroad who are killing Christians. Well, also attending this conference is Father Dr. Alexei Shahada. He serves as the Director General of the Department of Ecumenical Relations and Development for the Patriarch of Antioch in Damascus, Syria. And he is with us now. Dr. Shahada, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you are welcome. Thank you for calling.
Now, you are here as a part of this conference. What message do you want people to hear during your visit here to the United States?
First, thank you very much for this interview, for calling me. I am here in USA because I invited by the Summit Committee to speak at the Conference of Persecution of Christians. And this will take place tomorrow, I think. For this, I'm very first thankful for all people organize this meeting, this conference. And the message is we are here in first line to appeal for peace in Syria for everybody. Christians are not Christians because at the end of the day, we are the same citizens of the country of Syria and we would like to live together for the rest of our lives. Therefore, it's important to impose the possibility of having peace as soon as possible in Syria.
Do you think that America, in your opinion, has America done enough to be? And I'm not talking about the government necessarily. And I'm not talking about military action. But do you feel like that Christians? Let's talk about Christians in America. Do you feel like they're standing with you? Do you have a sense that we care about your plight and the plight of your people?
Yes, just inviting us to this conference, it's a sign of being with us, staying with us, understanding our situation in Syria. So therefore, I think, yes, we have the heart and the deeds of the Christians in the USA to help us in Syria.
Help our listeners understand the importance of the biblical significance of the church there in Syria.
I couldn't hear you well. I'm sorry.
The fact that the church there in Syria goes all the way back to the beginning of the church and the historical significance there and why we must preserve the presence of the church there.
As you know, the Antiochian church was established by the two apostles, Peter and Paul, in the year 34. So it's the first church in the Hellenistic environment, if you want, in Antioch. And then the Christianity came from Antioch to Europe, to Rome, to Greece, to every place at the beginning of Christianity. So we are the first established church by the two apostles, Peter and Paul.
And it's why we need, I believe, to stand with our Christian brothers and sisters there in Syria. Dr. Shahada, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're making your way to the conference, so I want to thank you for taking time out to join us and know that we will continue to pray and stand with you and others there in Syria and other parts of the Middle East.
We are asking you for your prayers and for your support, and thank you very much for having me on the phone.
All right. Dr. Alexei Shahada, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. We're going to continue to talk about this. On the other side of the break, we really do need to stand with the persecuted church, and we need to defend religious freedom everywhere, here and abroad. All right, don't go away, because we're going to be opening up the phone lines here in just a moment on Washington Watch. We'll be back.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
American Family Association presents A Gift for the Graduate, written by our founder, Don Wildman. This little book includes 34 short, timeless stories to encourage and inspire young people to trust God and to pursue all God wants them to be. Each story begins with a Bible verse and concludes in a way that will encourage your graduate to think about the things that matter most. Order your copy of A Gift for the Graduate today at afastore.net.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Now available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, we're gonna talk more tomorrow about the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians. This is a big deal for me. It should be a big deal for every Christian in this country. But when you've actually talked to some of the victims and you've seen some of this, and these are people for no other reason than just the fact that they're followers of Jesus Christ. And, of course, we've allowed, and in some cases tolerated, the hostility here at home. But I'm telling you, there's a connection. And that's why I was so pushing so hard for that executive order on religious liberty for the president to make a statement, which he did, that his administration will protect and vigorously promote religious freedom in this country. I mean, we need to put the world on notice that religious liberty matters to America again. Now, it did not to Barack Obama. He trampled on it. It was a barrier to what he wanted to accomplish. And that's how the left sees religion. It's fine if, you know, you want to keep it in your churches. That's fine. But don't let it come out, because it gets in the way of our agenda to remake society and the culture and the image that we want. And religion gets in the way. I mean, religion gets in the way of redefining marriage. It gets in the way of redefining gender. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, when people believe that stuff in the Bible, that God created man and woman, it kind of gets in the way for those that think there's 52 different genders, or that marriage can be whatever you want it to be. So anyway, we're going to talk about that. My good friend Stephen Corey is going to be joining us tomorrow. He's from Israel, but he's over here for the conference, so he's going to be joining me. He's in Jerusalem. His father is the pastor of First Baptist Church in Bethlehem. I've been to his church a few times. In fact, their church has been bombed over a dozen times. So anyway, we're going to talk more about that tomorrow. But for now, already getting some responses here about James Comey and the president responding. I tell you what, hold on there, Shirley, because I'm going to take your call, because I always like to hear from you. So you hold on right there, Shirley. But here's what we're going to talk about this afternoon. Did the president make the right decision? What do you think? Tomorrow, we're going to talk about the persecuted church more. But tonight, I want to kind of wrap up here talking about the president's decision. It's all over the news. Already getting some feedback on Facebook. Aranda says, listening to your show, POTUS acted on the recommendation of the assistant AG to let Comey go. The president didn't just up and fire him. Timing is not in question. Nothing to explain. The letters speak for themselves and speak perfectly. All T's crossed and I's dotted, period. All right, Rhonda, you are correct. The letters do speak very clearly. And I think the assistant attorney general made a pretty good case. And it's the president's prerogative. He does serve at the pleasure of the president. So what do you think? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Your thoughts on the president's decision to fire James Comey as the director of the FBI. That's what we're going to talk about here. But I'm going to take a call from Shirley in Tennessee. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am with you. I believe religious liberty does matter greatly. Someone was asking, does a person have to be a Christian in order to be president? I would say yes. It's like asking someone, does a person need to be God or you know, heavenly to rule over heaven? If you're in a Christian nation, I personally feel you should. But call me, yes, totally right decision. Came a little late for me. I wish it would have been done earlier. And we only need to look at France and Venezuela to see what happens when you don't have to be a Christian and when you don't even have to love the Lord, but yet you get leadership. You get to rule.
Well, the scripture speaks very clearly about when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. When the wicked are in authority, the people moan. There's been a lot of moaning in America. But look, I mean, as Christians, and I want to commend our listeners and beyond for what they did in this last election. Now, look, Donald Trump has some issues, but one of the things he has made very, very clear and has done since he's been president has been respectful of not only religious freedom, but he's been respectful of Christians, which is a breath of fresh air. But this wouldn't have happened had Christians not voted in the last election. 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. Almost 26% of the voting population were evangelicals. And when we talk about praying for righteous government, we want righteous government, we want good government in America. Well, it doesn't happen unless you put good people in government. And it's not just about the president. When the president comes in, he brings people with him. And it would take me a long time to list all the people I know that are now serving in this administration who are born-again, Bible-believing Christians who do not check their faith at the door of the workplace. Oh, I know that makes liberals, makes them shake and shiver. Well, good. Keep shaking. In fact, there's going to be a whole lot of shaking going on because there's a lot more people coming who understand the integration of faith and their public service. Not imposing it on anybody, but wanting to live out their faith in a way to serve the people around them. And that's happening right now in real time in this administration. Shirley, thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from you. All right, let's go to Texas where Nelson is on the line. Nelson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Mr. Tony Perkins. Yes, I think the president should have done what he did yesterday on the first week of his presidency. And not only that, I think in the Senate, there's a lot of cleaning to do, not only there, but also in the Internal Revenue Service. There's a lot of cleaning to do in the House. He should have done that quicker.
A lot of the swamp still needs to be drained. So, good point, Nelson. Thank you for the call. I if the president would have done this in the first week or two, he probably would have still gotten criticism. But you're right. I think moving more quickly on it would have been less. Well, I mean, I'm going to say he's going to be criticized no matter what he does. but he might have had a better defense because that would have been closer to the Democrats even calling for Comey to be removed or that they had lost confidence in him. Nelson, thanks for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Indiana where Bill is on the line. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
Very good. Well, my thoughts on this is we need to set up a special shop on the Capitol steps to sell gator boots made out of hide to a lot of these guys. After this, you know, we're supposed to drain the swamp. It's overdue. Comey should have been gone on day one, along with quite a few others in Washington. This has been going on far too long. My thoughts.
All right, Bill, thanks so much for weighing in on it. There's a lot to still drain in the swamp. And look, anytime you make changes, you are going to ruffle feathers. And the Democrats, I'm just telling you, liberals, I've never seen anything like it. They are waiting. I mean, just waiting to criticize something that this president does. Now, I know, look, Washington is a partisan city. You know, America has become more partisan in many, many ways. When I was in the Louisiana legislature, I was first elected 21 years ago, actually 1996. And there were 144 in the legislature. And when I was elected, I was like, I don't know, there were 24 Republicans. All the rest were Democrats. But, you know, we worked together. We had a Democratic speaker, but a Republican speaker pro tem. And, you know, our issues weren't partisan. They were ideological. We worked along ideological lines. I was shocked when I came to Washington, you know, 14 years ago, and that was missing. The idea of working together across party lines. Now, it happens occasionally, but not very often. It's all about party lines. Even if you agree on the issues, you're not going to cross over because it's a partisan issue, unless it's something that's, you know, like naming a post office or something like that. So you just have to expect criticism. And that's one thing I like about this president. I think that's one of the reasons he's attracted so much support is that he does not allow the criticism to slow him down. And that's a rare, rare bird, if you will, in today's society, even among Christians. And that's what kind of frustrates me with Christians, because of all people, we know the truth. And I'm not saying you be offensive, but you should not be. You should not go silent out of fear of man. And that's what all that is. That's what it boils down to. And so while this president, I'm not sure where he gains his strength to face this criticism, and I think it probably does bother him. I mean, I know it does based on what I've seen and what I've heard. He does not like criticism, and it affects him. But I got to give him credit for being willing to stand up in the face of it and not shrink back and not surrender in the face of the criticism. That's how I see it. All right, let's go to Louisiana where Leo is on the line. Leo, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Still about President Trump doing what he did to Comey when he did it is just the right time because the assistant ag had to get in office, get in position to be able to make a recommendation to get rid of Comey. But Comey needed to go because he gave Hillary a get-out-of-jail-free card. But not only that, also the terrorist activities that's taking place in our country, San Bernardino, Orlando, that hasn't been fully taken care of while he was in office. That's what he should have been taking care of. He shouldn't have been doing the jury part of Hillary's decision. He should have made his recommendations to the Justice Department and then got out of the way.
Good point. And that's what the Deputy Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General said, is that, you know, it's highly, highly unusual and basically a breach of protocol for the FBI director to, you know, make his recommendation and then step out and do a press conference. I mean, that's not what they do. They make the recommendation and they let the AG take care of it from there. Leo, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Indiana where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you. Hey, wasn't Comey in front of some committee just recently?
Well, he's actually was supposed to testify tomorrow before, I believe, a Senate committee, and now I think the assistant attorney general is going to be talking.
Okay. Well, I just saw him on TV recently, and it just seemed like he was so undecisive. And what I got out of the interview that I saw on TV is that, yeah, they're guilty, but I don't really feel like doing anything about it. And that's kind of been the genre of his whole time in the FBI. I think if you're going to drain the swamp, might as well start at the top. But this is something that really should have been done a long time ago, and I've been following it real close. And yeah, I think it's the best news that we could have received as a nation, as Christians, even if you're not a Christian. Because I think that no doubt Trump's making us, President Trump, he's making us safer. I can see it already. But it was a good move, and I don't see anything wrong with the timing. It was something that needed to be done, and he just got tired of it. I think he's just losing a little patience with some of this stuff that's going on, and he's doing something about it. So, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, thank you, Tony.
All right, Bob. Thanks so much. Probably you did see Comey because, I mean, he's testifying a lot on the Hill, but he was scheduled to testify tomorrow before the Senate Intelligence Committee. But the acting director, Andrew McCabe, will be testifying about worldwide threats tomorrow with Comey being dismissed. You know, I agree. This is how I look at it. In fact, I would not want anybody associated with the Obama administration in my administration unless they were an outspoken critic of the policies of the president. Because especially when it comes to the Department of Justice, the FBI director worked for the Attorney General under the Department of Justice. We had one of the most lawless administrations in the history of the country. I mean, the Attorney General was held in contempt of Congress. I mean, he refused to answer questions regarding regarding the Fast and Furious. Refused to talk to Congress, give them the information. Most lawless administration. So, yeah, I wouldn't have held anybody over. Now, I know they have to systematically work through. They can't just release everybody all at once who's going to mind the store. But I think they're moving a little slow on removing some of these people. All right. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but thank you all for listening and for calling in. Looks like it was unanimous from our callers. The president made the right decision. All right. We're going to be back, Lord willing, tomorrow night. I hope you will as well. We'll continue our discussion on the persecuted church as we're joined by Stephen Corey from Jerusalem here in the U.S. for this conference and topics of interest to you. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.